From the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Good Weekend Talks, and I'm Conrad Marshall. Join us as we take a deep dive into the definitive stories of the day, brought to life here and in the pages of Good Weekend magazine. In this episode, we go back to an April 2019 cover story on the way parents are menacing teachers and principals. Written by Good Weekend senior writer Melissa Fife and Age education editor Henrietta Cook, the piece explores a world of furious Facebook posts, abusive emails, and school sit-ins. Today, Melissa will be joined in conversation by Katrina Strickland, the editor of Good Weekend, along with Karen Terry, an experienced Victorian secondary school principal, to discuss the increasing frequency and severity of attacks from badly behaved mums and dads. But first, actor Sarah Bishop will read the story in full, so sit down and have a listen to The New School Bullies Aren't Children, They're Parents. Listeners should be advised that this reading contains some explicit language. Please note, some names have been changed.
When something inside you breaks, the most basic matters can be overlooked. Take, for example, the case of Queensland construction worker Matt Barino. One Sunday evening in May last year, the 48-year-old flew out of his house in such a fury he barely registered his outfit, grey flannelette pyjamas and some worn sandals he calls slippers. In that moment, there was only one thing that mattered: confronting the principal of the local high school at her home, a 20-minute drive away. Speeding away from his mountain home in the genteel hinterland of southeast Queensland, it's unlikely he noticed the organic farms, wineries, and hedges topped with tropical blooms that he drove past. Matt was gripped only by thoughts of this principal and what he believed she had done to his family. Only moments before, he had been in bed with his wife, Deborah, a nurse, checking emails before the working week, their usual practice. Things were looking up for the first time in months. They'd signed a contract to sell their house. They loved the mountain, but life here was now poisoned by a bitter legal dispute with Tricia Brodeur, the principal of the local state high school. In a landmark defamation case, symbolic of the increasingly fraught relationship between parents and schools, Brodeur, a 51-year-old with 28 years in education, is suing four parents, including the Barinos, for $220,000 each for allegedly defamatory comments made in March 2016. The case goes to trial in October. A further three parents have already settled with her, and one has declared herself bankrupt under the weight of the ongoing legal costs. In comments on an online petition to reinstate Brodeur, who had been suspended from school, Deborah, 46, called her an evil, nasty, horrible woman. Matt said, "She's not interested in the kids that don't fit the norm of education, only high achievers." Several years earlier, in 2014, Brodeur had expelled Deborah's then 12-year-old son, who has learning difficulties. The school's report into his expulsion said he made inappropriate sexual comments to a year one student on the school bus. Deborah and Matt believed the incident was a one-off, that their son was encouraged by friends, but their pleas went unheard. Despite apologies, the boy was kicked out of school 2 weeks after starting year seven. In the past 2.5 years, with little money for lawyers, the Barinos have represented themselves against Brodeur and lost a series of legal skirmishes, making them liable for some of her legal costs. When Brodeur saw that the Barinos' house was on the market, she applied for an order to freeze their assets and secure any payment the court might award her, temporarily stopping the sale from going through. This was rather unhelpful as the couple had signed a contract to buy their dream home on the coast. News of the order, via an email from their solicitor that Sunday night, was the last straw for Matt, the boy's stepfather. In a rage, at about 9 p.m. he wound his way in his car to the quiet street where Brodeur, her husband James, and their three young children live in a cream brick house with smart timber trims. He knocked on the door and looked up, catching a glimpse of the principal through the blinds upstairs. Brodeur's 11-year-old disabled daughter came to the door and said her mother wasn't home. "I just saw her," Matt insisted. Next, James appeared. "This has gone too far," Matt remembers saying through the security door. "Get your wife down here to talk to me because I can be reasonable. Don't shut the door or I will open the door for you." James shut the door and said he was calling the police. Matt, who is not a big man, but is lean, sinewy and bald with intense brown eyes, sent a round of shuddering kicks into the hard mesh metal security door. Meanwhile, James, at the request of the 000 operator, picked up his phone and filmed the last 90 seconds of the incident. On the footage later played in court, you can hear Trisha frantically pleading for help, then screaming, then telling her kids to go upstairs and urging her husband, who armed himself with a bread knife, to stay back. Go back. "So you are here, you fucking piece of shit," Matt can be heard saying. The security door finally buckled inwards, hitting the front door, which was made of wood and glass panels. The door's timber frame split like matchsticks. Glass shards clattered to the floor. A large hole was now in both doors, and through it, you can see a pajamas-clad figure in retreat. Matt got in his car and drove off, passing the police coming the other way. Sirens on, lights flickering red and blue. When Principal John Collier made the news last year, the ABC snapped a picture that seemed to sum him up perfectly. In the photo, the head of St Andrew's Cathedral School and Garua School in Sydney sits behind a desk stacked with piles of paper. He has a slightly slumped, world-weary disposition and a face etched by 47 years in education. He doesn't look like a headline grabber, but last June, Collier's newsletter to his private school community went internationally viral. "A minority of parents," he wrote, "had verbally abused, physically threatened, or shouted at staff members. Sure," he said, "perceived threats to children can bring forth a reptilian kind of defensive response in parents, but they really needed to chill." Chill, indeed. That's the message coming loud and clear from the nation's educators as they face a crisis level of bullying, threats and abuse from parents. 1 in 3 principals have been threatened with violence by a parent, according to a nationwide snapshot of principal health and wellbeing undertaken annually by the Australian Catholic University, the ACU. In the 2018 survey of primary and secondary school principals, 21% reported having been bullied by a parent, a rate that's doubled since 2011, making mums and dads the biggest bullies in the schoolyard. In another 2018 study yet to be released, La Trobe University looked at teacher-targeted bullying and harassment, or TTBH, as it is known in academic circles. Its survey of 560 teachers found nearly two-thirds had been recently bullied by a parent. Parent-led bullying was more common in primary schools, with younger female teachers the more likely victims. The most common form of parent-led bullying was verbal, yelling and arguing on behalf of a child. Physical attacks by parents on teachers were rare, while 8.8% reported a parent standing over or invading their personal space, just 1% had been hit or punched by a parent. Parents are behaving in ways once thought unimaginable. In researching this story, Good Weekend came across reports of parents going straight to the State Education Department if a teacher failed to hang a child's unfinished work in the classroom, rifling through teachers' desks, and asking for extra roles to be created in the school play because their child had missed out. They are staging sit-ins, hatching coup-like plots to topple principals, and tailgating educators in the car park. There are parents who undermine through gossip, often online, others with threats of legal action. And some are persistent, vexatious complainers who pen 10-page emails with more capital letters and exclamation marks than Donald Trump's Twitter feed. Retired New South Wales principal and distinguished educator Dennis Slay, who's written about the topic for The Sector, puts problem parents into 5 categories. The litigation expert, the system spy, the pouting pullout, the tennis club talker, now also the Facebook gossip, and the bitter volunteer. All types of parent bullies take hours for schools to deal with, hours that could, of course, be spent on improving the education of children. It has devastating effects on individual principals and teachers. In the La Trobe study, teachers reported anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder from bullying and harassment, with some suffering panic attacks and uncontrollable shaking. About 83% said they had considered leaving the profession because of harassment from parents and students. Rattled educators are flocking to counselling programs. "We have definitely had an increase in the number of educators seeking counselling," says Marcella Slepica, Director of Clinical Services at Workplace Mental Health Experts, Access EAP. "If they are young teachers, they might just leave the profession," she says. Meanwhile, state education departments, already struggling to attract new principals and battling high teacher attrition, are scrambling to address poor parent behaviour. Victoria has recently set up the Australia First Independent Office for School Dispute Resolution to resolve toxic disputes between parents and schools. And last December, a new school community charter was rolled out across New South Wales, essentially a guide to respectful, timely, and polite communication between parents, staff, and students. Australian Catholic University Associate Professor Philip Riley, the chief investigator on the Principal Wellbeing Study, puts the situation into battle-like terms. "Our nation builders," he says, "are under attack. It's a bigger problem than just schools," he says. "Nurses, police officers, and social workers are all reporting the same sorts of increases in offensive behaviour. The problem," he speculates, "stems from a loss of trust in institutions we once believed in. In some ways, that's clearly a good thing. Look at how they've behaved. Absolutely appallingly," he says, thinking of the church, banks, politics, cheating cricketers. "The problem is that institutions have kind of held societies together, and given that we don't trust any of them anymore, the glue's gone a bit." John Collier from St Andrews, who stresses that nearly all his parents are just wonderful, remembers the 1970s, when parents barely engaged at all. "Now," he says, "the problem stems from nothing less than the breakdown of societal civility. People have become shriller in their interactions, less inclined to listen and more self-focused," he says. "I think people are following the bad example set by people in the public eye, such as politicians shouting at each other in question time and sporting superstars sledging and taunting each other." It's 2:50 p.m. and the buses, two pale yellow and one white, are pulling up outside a high school built for lush, subtropical Queensland. Little corrugated caps shade each window. Big downpipes corral the rains. The footpath carries a rusty taint from the hinterland's fertile red dirt. In a nearby Kia wagon, a waiting mother, sunglasses pushed through blonde hair, bends her neck to her phone. Perhaps she waits for an anxious student, or an ambitious one, a future artist, politician, or entrepreneur. This is the nature of high school, a stage on which adolescence, its fledgling dreams, raging hormones, and domestic reckonings plays out. And this particular school is centre stage for another type of drama, the biggest principal versus parent defamation case seen in Australia. The kids are filing out, orderly and neat, like soldiers decamping. On their heads, barely a hair is awry. On their feet, without exception, all wear black shoes and ankle-length white socks. The attention to detail is no accident. This high school is known as a public school of high standards. Principal Brodeur runs a tight ship, and many parents love her for it. Parents and Citizens Association President Darren Housedale is one. His daughters were at another school where one was bullied. That school, he says, did little about it. He switched them to Brodeur's high school because she was known for having no tolerance for bullying or any derogatory language towards others, and was strict on drug use and dress codes. "I am the parent of three daughters who have been through that school and turned out fantastically because of it," says Housedale. "I respect the school so much." In February 2016, the Queensland Department of Education suspended Brodeur for reasons never explained. Brodeur was subsequently reinstated in May that year. she says, clearly and fully exonerated. But for weeks, the school community was left in the dark. 3 weeks after Brodeur's suspension, Housedale began a change.org petition asking the then Queensland Education Minister, Kate Jones, for a fast and fair resolution for Brodeur. That's when the trouble began. The petition quickly spread across the Facebook feeds of the Hinterland community, which numbers around 7,000. Many parents raved about Brodeur. My family and I came up here 5 years ago especially to put our daughters in arguably Queensland's best high school, wrote one parent. Trisha is a brilliant mixture of old school and modern schooling techniques. But others vehemently disagreed. How many is hard to tell, as most negative posts on the petition have been deleted. Among those sued for their comments was school crossing guard Rita Scott, a parent of two former students who alleged Brodeur was a lying, manipulative bully and pathetic. Another complained bitterly about exacting measurements being taken of the length of his daughter's skirts. One called her bad rubbish and accused her of trying to destroy her daughter's future. In one particularly damaging allegation, a parent floated the incorrect idea that Brodeur had been stood down for a sex offence or a serious incident that had resulted in harm to a child. Brodeur sued that parent and he settled, paying her about $93,000. Australian principals and teachers have sued parents and students over social media and email comments before, but not often. In 2009, Jenny Ryan, the principal of Beecroft Public School in Sydney's northern suburbs, sued parent Rajaratnam Premachandran after he sent a scathing email to other parents calling for her resignation. Premachandran was ordered to pay Ryan $82,453 plus costs. In 2014, the New South Wales District Court ordered former student Andrew Farley to pay Orange High School music teacher Christine Mickle $105,000 for defamatory tweets and Facebook posts. But the Brodeur suit, a case aiming at one point for $1.76 million in damages, is a record breaker in Australia. And the ongoing legal costs have already tipped school crossing guard Rita Scott into applying for voluntary bankruptcy, she says, and she may lose her house. This has destroyed me and pretty much destroyed my whole family, she tells Good Weekend. But Darren Housedale, the man responsible for the petition, has little sympathy for the keyboard warriors who find themselves sued and at risk of losing their houses. I don't think people realise that just because there is freedom of speech, there's no freedom of character assassination. After several years of defending themselves, not very well, they admit, the Barinos have put a second mortgage on their house to pay Sydney defamation lawyer Barry Goldsmith, who has applied to resubmit their defences. The Barinos will be relying partly on Truth as their defence for allegedly defaming Brodeur. There are about 15 to 20 pages of particulars to support the defence of Truth, says Goldsmith, who has been practising defamation law for 35 years. I am not saying all or any of these particulars will be accepted by the court, but yes, absolutely, we need to prove that the plaintiff is evil. Brodeur, who is still principal at the high school, declined to be interviewed for this article, but provided a statement saying that during a 5-day period in March 2016, her reputation was severely damaged. Despite repeated requests that the defamatory comments be removed, those responsible ignored my requests, and I was left with no choice but to issue legal proceedings. Three defendants have made amends for their conduct, she said, but others carry on defending the case, causing continued hurt, anxiety, and distress. Brodeur ended her statement with a suggestion that she was drawing a line for all educators. I am determined to hold those remaining defendants responsible for their actions, as I believe that no school principal or teacher should be expected to suffer or endure such behaviour from the parents of former students or indeed the former students themselves. Brodeur's case will be a key legal test for how the parent-school relationship is conducted in the age of social media. In this new era, teachers can be reviewed on the privately run national Rate My Teacher website, often devastatingly, as easily as you rate your Uber driver. Parents can destroy a reputation with a blind copy email. One senior teacher tells Good Weekend that she came to work one day to find a parent had written a nasty email to the principal, accusing her of victimising her daughter, and had blind copied all the parents she thought would take her side. Email is really problematic with parents, because it doesn't matter what you say. They can cut and paste it and send it on and do terrible things, she says. By the end of Paul O'Shaughnessy's 17-year teaching career, the constant stream of emails from irate parents had become unbearable. Back in the day, if you had a problem, you would come to see me, explains the education advisor, who worked at some of Melbourne's top private schools, including St Michael's Grammar, and now runs Regent Consulting, a service that helps parents choose the right school for their child. These days, a child comes home upset, mum or dad writes the red wine email and copies in the year level coordinator. Cyber safety expert Susan McLean says she's seen a marked increase in parents behaving badly towards school staff in the past 5 years. McLean, who has a private consultancy based in Melbourne and visits about 230 schools each year, says parents posting gripes on the school Facebook page can be easy to deal with because at least the school knows. More difficult is parents talking down teachers and principals on their own Facebook account or bombarding the school with abusive emails. For every decent parent, I would suggest that there are two that are not, she says. Shelley Hill, a Perth mother of four boys, who is also the president of the non-governmental Australian Parents Council, disagrees with McLean's grim analysis. She believes most parents have great respect for teachers and only a minority are problematic. In schools, in childcare and business, you always get those people who potentially make it more difficult than it should be, and the expectation is higher and more unreasonable than normal. But the majority of parents do the right thing. For Hill, it boils down to poor communication. From a parent's perspective, too often decisions are made at a school level, but the reason why is not communicated. From a cramped fourth floor office in Melbourne CBD, Frank Handy sits at the pointy end of the most toxic disputes between parents and schools in the Victorian education system. He's chair of the Independent Office for School Dispute Resolution. A mediator, a circuit breaker, a maker of peace. The office, only 2 years old and part of a wider strategy designed to help reduce teacher stress and workloads, was established to counter perceptions that the Victorian Education Department had a conflict of interest when it came to investigating itself. A former Canadian litigator, Handy wears crisp white shirts and patterned ties and peers through brown spectacles. Sometimes there's yelling, crying, and a sense of despair, he says. There's a lot of emotion. For parents, it's their child's safety, their child's future. And for principals, they often feel besieged. They have been trying to cope and sort out the problem. They are frustrated. By the time he gets involved, the situation is usually ugly. The education department has been unable to resolve a parent's complaint and the relationship between the school and family has broken down. In some cases, the spat has festered for years. Aside from two thank you cards propped up on a white bookshelf, his office is devoid of anything personal. The dispute resolution expert spends most of his time on the road, running mediation sessions in classrooms, public library meeting rooms, or cafes. We try to eliminate all the social power structures that people get concerned about with institutions, he explains. Since opening, the office has handled almost 100 complaints, about half of which have been resolved. They typically involve how a child has been disciplined, disagreements over marks, and concerns over child safety. Handy doesn't decide who is right or wrong. His job is to help schools and families find a solution that prioritises student well-being. We have the student in the centre, he says, scrawling a stick figure in his notebook. We're all around here, making contributions, he says, adding a series of rings to his doodle. When St Helena Secondary College principal Karen Terry, 54, sits at her desk, the owls watch her. There are ceramic owls, metal owls, cloth owls, all perched on her desk and bookshelf. A teacher gave her the first owl figurine when she was appointed principal. It symbolised wisdom, she was told. Since then, many more students and teachers have helped build her 20-strong collection. There's even an owl teapot, owl vase, and a 3D-printed owl in her office at the respected state high school in Melbourne's northeast. Sometimes her chocolate Labrador, Moby, whose presence helps calm difficult students, rests at her feet. Above him, in a wooden desk drawer, a bundle of abusive, anonymous letters gather dust. They have all been written by parents. One accuses Terry, who likes to wear heels and bright coloured outfits, of slut-shaming girls when she asks them to ensure their skirts are not too short. "You need to look at your own outfits," it reads. Another demands a teacher's sacking. "They can be really horrible," Terry says. The experienced educator of more than 30 years, who chairs a network of 52 state schools in Melbourne's northeast, says unreasonable expectations and bullying from parents is the number one issue facing principals. "I have had a parent who has made an appointment with me and come in and asked me to stop her son having sex," she says. Last year, when Terry was seconded to another school for 6 months, she witnessed a steady stream of parents arriving at the front desk demanding to see teachers. The catalyst for these unexpected visits? Children calling parents on their mobile phones during school hours about grievances with staff. The parents' response is automatic, Terry says. They contact the school or turn up. One parent barged into the school reception and demanded a meeting because her son had unreasonably been ordered to stand outside a classroom for talking. The receptionist told the parent everyone was busy and promised she'd receive a call from the principal later that day. "They left and I thought, oh great, this is going to be really easy." But to her dismay, the parent returned half an hour later, armed with a sustaining picnic of sandwiches, drinks, and donuts. "They weren't going to move until I came out. They lasted 3.5 hours. They staged a sit-in." Terry links this behaviour to what she describes as a pervasive happyology, a belief children must be happy all the time. They don't want their children to feel any sense of discomfort or distress, she says. Another exasperated principal, who wants to remain anonymous, recently wrote an excoriating note to parents at a middle-class suburban school in Melbourne. "It has become more and more apparent to me that we are raising some of the most fragile children ever," the note read. "It seems that many parents simply will not allow their children to experience any kind of challenge, setback, discomfort, sanction, or to take responsibility for their actions." The biggest shift in this educator's 30 years of experience has been in parental expectations. "Parents, I implore you, please let us do our job. We are professional educators who know how to deal with and develop young people. Every time you needlessly second-guess us, question minutia, or simply refuse to support the school, it actively damages your children." Terry, who has worked hard to build positive relationships with her school's families, suspects parents working long hours feel the need to compensate for not always being available. "They maybe feel a little bit guilty about not being as involved with their kids," she says. "They try to compensate by advocating for them, but it's sometimes in a misguided way." If the children are in private schools, the parents are both parents and paying customers, ones whose school fees have risen at more than twice the rate of inflation over the past decade, according to education fund provider ASG. "They are certainly more vocal, that's definitely been my experience," says Alex Conn, a Sydney-based education lawyer who acts for schools. "Parents feel that, well, I am paying all this money. I believe I am entitled to talk to whomever and get whatever it is that I am seeking." There are other things to stress about too, like how competitive education has become. Everyone is worried about falling behind, and in periods of employment stress, which we are all under now, that can't be a good thing, says the ACU's Philip Riley. And that's sealed by the whole school choice thing. Parents are forced to apparently choose between good and bad schools, and they never know if they've made the right choice or not. Clearly, people are worried, and they are going to sometimes lash out. Adding to parental angst is the ultimate stressor: family breakdown. Schools are often the setting for disputes over access to children, with teachers and principals left to enforce court orders. I have seen a significant increase in issues around supporting families, particularly when relationships aren't working, says Michael Gray, the principal of St Joseph's Primary School in Warrnambool, southwest Victoria. A 30-year education veteran, Gray is also president of the Victorian Association of Catholic Primary School Principals. You can have issues of road rage around schools with parking, but that's pretty mundane. The high-stress area is when it's to do with children and their well-being and fairness of access. Later this year, Annie Mears will retire as principal of St Kevin's School, Hampton Park, in Melbourne's southeast, after 45 years in education. It has been, she says, a great privilege to serve communities and help each child reach their potential. But some of her worst moments have come through custodial issues, having to approach a parent quietly on school property and say, "You need to leave this place because this is against the law and your child will be frightened to see you." In 2011, she asked her father to leave because of an intervention order. He shirt-fronted her, pushing her against a wall. "You just don't expect that," she says. Deborah and Matt Barino now live in a gated community on the Queensland coast. The sale of their hinterland home and the purchase of this one eventually went through. Their place, white tiled floor, silver air conditioner, grey throw rugs, looks on to a lagoon. Deborah, warm and sunny in a white embroidered top and blue skirt, offers sponge cake and biscuits. But when Matt, in shorts and a neat shirt, sits down, his eyes betray his stress. He looks like he hasn't slept for days. He's tightly wound and his arms gesticulate in boxer-like short jabs. The police charged him with malicious damage and threatening violence at night over the Brodeur front door incident. There's no court date set, nor has he entered a plea or retained a lawyer. But the couple seem less worried about that than October's defamation case. They've put everything on the line to defend it. "We didn't think it at the time. Let's put all this stuff up about her and hopefully we might lose our house over it, you know," says Deborah. "We didn't create this, they did," she says, of the school's Parents and Citizens Association, led by Housedale, who put up the petition to reinstate Principal Brodeur. As a gecko darts up an outside wall near the barbecue, the conversation turns to Matt's schooling. "I was the skinny little wog that didn't know how to speak English and never had the right shoes or the right socks or the right uniform," says Matt, who was born in Uruguay. "I was the wog that got picked on. I know what bullying is like. I grew up with it all my life." This experience, along with his sense of justice for people being bullied and his acute loyalty to his family, has influenced his handling of the high school saga. The Barinos say they offered an apology at mediation, but Brodeur did not accept it. Brodeur denies this. Brodeur filed a defamation suit in June 2016 against the Queensland Department of Education for $380,000 in damages for defamation, invasion of privacy, and breach of confidence relating to a complaint that Brodeur harassed and discriminated against a staff member. She dropped the case when reinstated as principal. We're interrupted by the arrival of Lisa Belair, 49, another defendant. She alleged in her 2016 Facebook post that Brodeur made her two sons' lives a nightmare and that some parents had been trying to get rid of the principal for years. But Belair spent most of her post talking about one incident in which she was told to take her sons home because they had dyed their hair. She says she was often called to Brodeur's office to discuss her son's suspension over dress code violations and minor infringements. Brodeur, she says, told her that people with bold hair colour never get jobs and advised her not to allow her sons to get facial piercings. Belair herself has a nose and eyebrow piercing and, at the time, a bright purple fringe. In the period in which she received the writ, her husband left her and she was forced to sell the house. "Early last year, she told Brodeur's lawyers that she had no money. I said, 'If your client has even a shred of compassion, you will let me go from this case.'" In response to this plea, she says Brodeur's lawyers reduced the amount they were seeking from $220,000 to $90,000. "It just goes to show how much she despises me after all these years. Every single time something happened with my kids, I challenged her, and that's something we all did. We challenged her. Another sued parent, who was also coming to the Barino home to meet Good Weekend, texts Deborah while we're there, pulling the plug. "I keep having panic attacks and I can't stop crying," the text reads. There's a pause in the conversation. The stakes seem so ridiculously high that a few social media comments can lead to such stress, financial pain, bankruptcy, and the risk of losing your home, not to mention an alleged home invasion and the hurt, pain, and sheer terror suffered by a principal. But there's also, with these parents here, an enduring sense of defiance, a feeling that ultimately they did the right thing by their children. "Yeah, I kicked the door in," Matt says. "I am not saying it was the right thing, but I did it because I got pushed so far. We are just parents who stood up for our child. I am a man who stood up for my family."
If you're enjoying this podcast, please remember to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And remember to rate and comment on iTunes.
Hello, my name's Katrina Strickland and I'm the editor of Good Weekend. Joining me today to talk about the new schoolyard bullies are Melissa Fife, senior writer with Good Weekend, and Karen Terry, principal of St. Helena Secondary College in Eltham North in Victoria. With more than 30 years' experience, Karen has chaired for 3 years a network of 52 state schools in Melbourne's northeast, which she just recently gave up chairing that. Welcome, Karen and Melissa.
Hi, Katrina.
Hello.
Karen, let's start with you. Parents worldwide have realised through COVID-19 just how difficult it is to teach. Are they being nicer to teachers and principals as a result?
My experience here at St. Helena has been yes. I think what's happened mainly is that they're more patient and I think they're a little bit more understanding of the job that teachers have. There's been some lovely memes circulating about homeschooling, as they call it, sort of like first day I've expelled a child and the teacher's gone home drunk kind of thing. They're now realising that it is a complex role. So, yes, I would say so.
And Mel, you're a parent of two children, one of whom I think is in primary school. What's the view that you hear from your parental group about how difficult it is and how differently they're looking at the teachers that they perhaps were critical of before?
I think that it's mixed, but I think it's an amazing opportunity to kind of be able to see the process of teaching and to see how skilled a profession it is. I never sort of thought so deeply about the teaching profession until COVID. I'm really hopeful that some of the behaviour that we reported on with this story, I'm really hopeful that it kind of reduces after this period of lockdown.
Karen, what do you think the likelihood of that is?
I agree with what Mel has said, actually. I think parents actually, probably less so at secondary school, but when they're seeing their children online and they're seeing the teacher and they're getting a bird's eye view into a classroom that they would never ordinarily have, they are getting some more empathy, I think, for teachers. I've had emails from parents. I'm thinking in particular, I've got a teacher, a biology teacher, and I received a great email from a parent just talking about how patient this teacher was in explaining a really, really difficult concept to a class. And it was a new concept at VCE level. So I think they're actually starting to see what we do. And not relying on their own experiences or their own memories for what school was like for them.
It's that age-old thing, isn't it? As soon as you know someone or something a bit more, you understand it better.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, a lot of the research about bullying between students is around that. You're less likely to bully someone if you have empathy for them and you gain empathy through knowing.
And what's going to be the most difficult part of returning kids to school?
Where do you want to start? I must admit, my personal view is I thought we were going to be remote for term two. I already have had a number of emails from parents saying, you know, we know you're going to handle the transition back really, really well, but with due respect, I'm not sending my child back in term two.
Right. Have you had some teachers say they don't want to come back?
Yes.
In the classroom?
They're anxious about coming back. I mean, on one hand, they want to, that they love their work and they love being with the students, but on the other hand, they're anxious either about their own health or about the health of people that they may live with, for example. And I think engagement is going to be tricky on the return. With no sport, no activities, no excursions, that kind of thing, to break what could be a very monotonous school week otherwise, those things that make you a community, those things that build relationships between teachers and students, it's going to be challenging in how we tackle that and still have our students feel that they belong here and that school's a place they want to be and it can be fun.
Mel, historically, parents and teachers haven't always been in this combative relationship. When did it start changing?
In the last sort of 10 years, I think, we've seen what has basically been a lack of institutional faith. So we've seen institutions in society behaving poorly, such as the church. We've seen a loss of faith in our politicians and our political system in some cases. Basically, one of the theories is that we've also had a broad-ranging lack of reduction in the faith in institutions. Teachers are possibly victims of that. But I don't think it's the only thing that's been going on. I think that there's a lot of other factors, two parents working, high house prices, financial stress, education's become a lot more competitive. When you have private schools, you're paying a lot of money, so there's a lot of stress involved in wanting to make sure that your child is getting value for money education. We picked up as well in the article that family breakdown is another source of stress in the school environment. And I think a lot of the problems are about how you deal with essentially what's in a very emotional area. So if there's something going on with your child, if your child is being bullied or you don't feel they're being treated fairly at school, it's an emotional thing. Like, there are big emotions and we don't seem to have the emotional intelligence to deal with that conflict. So instead of going through processes that don't escalate conflict, certainly we picked up that there was a lot more litigation, a lot more violence, threats of violence, long emails, many multiple emails. And then you bring in social media and it can be quite an explosive situation.
And it is that breakdown of trust in institutions, isn't it, that makes you feel like you don't just accept that they're experts. Also, I think you had a great term, Karen, happyology, that we all now think it's our job to make sure our kids are happy and fix it if they're not. And that's been quite a change, hasn't it?
Yeah, happyology's, that's the term. Everybody's Mary Poppins. Everything's wonderful all the time and it can't be. Pop psychology books and things that are around, it's all about achieving happiness, that nirvana. And the reality is you can't in life. There are lots of things beyond your control. I see parents generally wanting to be a lot more involved in the decisions that happen on a school level, the operational decisions that they believe will impact on their child. So, you know, what we see is a lot of questioning of decisions which used to be in the realm of the school, what class your child went into, whether they had a detention for not handing in work or something. That was generally left to the school to manage. I feel that a lot of parents now are so anxious about their children being upset or what they perceive as being unfairly treated that they want to influence those decisions. And we'll have parents sometimes that say, oh, you are not allowed to speak to my child unless I'm present. To illustrate this, and this is a fairly recent one, actually, something that was accelerated to me. It was the suspension of a child. We don't do a lot of suspension, but it was fairly clear cut. The child had been involved in some online bullying, and the parent was challenging the suspension. And what she actually said to me was, my child has been crying because she's suspended. She's really upset about the suspension. I don't think it's fair. You're making her miserable. And my response was, but that's good if she's upset by the suspension, because it's showing that she's got some understanding and she probably won't do this again. There's that lack of willingness for to let it be and let young people build that resilience. And you'll only build resilience if you are challenged. So I think when parents are as anxious as they can be, it's also telling the child there's something to be anxious about. And so that anxiety transfers itself to the young person, who then straight on the mobile phone the moment anybody looks at them the wrong way. You know, it's sort of, mum, this teacher has been mean to me today. And the parent's at the front door before the bell's even rung.
On the flip side, teachers can't always be right 100% of the time. And as in any field, there's good teachers and bad teachers. How do you know whether you're being that helicopter parent who should just butt out and when it is actually right to state what you think?
I would say with parents, assume good intent. I don't think anybody sets out to make a mess of their job or to make a mistake or to hurt a child's feelings. So firstly, assume good intent. And secondly, approach with respect. My view here is parents are important, our students are important, and everybody's issue is an important issue. So we should speak and be open to hearing feedback from our parent community.
And the respect thing is key, isn't it? Mel, you had another story recently about Facebook groups and how people are towards each other. We almost, as a society, are having to relearn respect, having lost it with the kind of distancing that comes with social media.
Absolutely. And I think that point that Karen made about assuming good intent is so fundamental. Obviously, not everybody is well-intentioned, but instead of responding quickly to a Facebook post or a tweet with something that's personal and attacks the person rather than the issue, maybe we just sort of assume some good intent and go gently into that discussion. It doesn't mean you can't disagree, but to kind of start to pause, to think. And I think that's certainly what's got some parents into trouble with social media. We talked about a case in the story in Queensland where sort of late at night a couple of parents shot off a Facebook post which ended up being a very expensive, bitter dispute that went through the Queensland courts, and it was resolved last year. And really there were no winners out of that. There were absolutely no winners. The parents, there were a group of four parents, and two of them ended up having to spend, you know, quite a few of the parents went bankrupt trying to fight that case. And the principal felt that her entire reputation was destroyed. And she ended up having the case found in her favour, and it was an important case. And the principal said that she took these parents to court because she wanted to draw a line in the sand. The parents' argument was, well, she's a principal. She needs to sort of deal with some level of public criticism. And I wonder what you think of that, Karen. Like, I mean, what's fair and sort of what's not fair?
I think criticism is probably not a term. I wouldn't be welcoming criticism. I'd be welcoming feedback. It's how it's conveyed. And you're quite right there, Mel. In terms of social media, you miss all those nuances. You miss the tone, and you miss the pauses, and you miss the facial expressions that go with communication. And so social media can seem very, very harsh and very abusive. And the trouble with it is it's not like a conversation. It's public. And so it's humiliating. How humiliating to have these things said about you which were not necessarily factual, and you have no recourse because we have confidentiality, we have privacy laws that govern what we're able to say in the public space. It's also not very dignified to get into a stoush with a parent online anyway, but certainly you can't defend yourself in that situation. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a power play when it's done that way on social media because we can't respond.
Karen, I get the sense that Victoria has been quite groundbreaking in how it deals with these very thorny issues between teachers and parents. For one thing, it set up an independent office for school dispute resolution, which I gather is the only one in the country. Tell us about what Victoria is doing and what prompted it and how it's going.
Look, I really welcome the suite of initiatives that the government's brought in to support principal health and wellbeing. I think there's probably two factors that have thrown it into the spotlight. One is some longitudinal studies that have been done about principal physical and mental health, which has some quite remarkable findings in terms of the way that we manage sort of stress. And the other was one that's quite close to me, actually, because I knew him fairly well. It was the tragic suicide of Mark Thompson in 2014. So Mark was a very well-respected principal. He'd been working in the regional office for a period of time during the 2009 bushfires and was very heavily and actively involved in supporting bushfire affected communities. It took a big toll on Mark. And as a principal, he went back into school and had a dispute, if you want to call it that, with a parent around disability access that became quite personal and again took a huge toll on his health. And sadly and tragically, he couldn't see any way forward and took his own life. It's not the way you want to prompt somebody to act, but the department has responded on that, and there's been a range of initiatives brought in from 2019. So you mentioned the dispute resolution service, which is fantastic. We also have a complex matter support team. So sometimes we have parents who are vexatious, and their issues are not necessarily around their child. It might be around that parent's own mental health issues. So to be able to refer that to a complex matters support team, it relieves a huge amount of stress. There's an early intervention program for early warning signs of our health and well-being. We have free principal health and well-being checks, which is fantastic. We have something called proactive well-being supervision. And I think there's more to come. Is it enough? There's probably still a way to go. And the data coming out from some of these studies says that the pressures probably aren't reducing enough to see a change in that data yet. But I think certainly the intent is absolutely welcomed and necessary.
Thanks, Karen. Look, I think that's probably a good point to finish on. Let's hope that all the states are taking note, and good luck when you return your kids to the classroom. Thank you, Karen, and thank you, Mel.
Thanks, Katrina.
Thanks, Katrina.
Good Weekend Talks is brought to you by the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Subscriptions power our writers. To support independent journalism, search Subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. This episode was produced and edited by Anu Hasbold and Margaret Gordon, with editorial assistance from Conrad Marshall and technical assistance from Cormac Lally. Tom McKendrick is head of audio, and Katrina Strickland is the editor of Good Weekend. I'm Conrad Marshall. Thanks for listening.